Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The conflict over Taiwan, what is to be done? I welcome Grant Newsham, U.S. Marine Corps colonel, retired, now the author of When Japan Attacks, and now the author of a new essay about the anticipation of conflict in Western Pacific East Asia with the People's Republic of China, a chapter in a new book called The Boiling Moat, edited by Matt Pottinger. It is filled with comments and observations by veterans of conflict in the Pacific for many years. U.S. participates, Australia participates, all of the allied nations participate in anticipating what is to be done, anxious about the Chinese aggression in the South China Sea, across from the Okinawa island chain at the Senkakus, pushing very hard at the Philippines. All of this is anticipated in this book, The Boiling Moat. So I welcome Grant, and we are going to turn to the chapter that he provides about Japan and Japan's participation in the defense of Taiwan. You will recall that Prime Minister Kishida has made it very clear that if Taiwan is attacked, Japan's in. What does that mean? Grant, a very good evening to you. The Japan Self-Defense Forces, the numbers are significant here to me because for the first time I have a concept of what it is and how big it is right now. 250,000 personnel, I follow your reporting. 150,000 for Japan Ground Self-Defense Forces, the Marines, the Army. 50,000 each for the Maritime Self-Defense Forces and the Air Self-Defense Forces. That would be the Navy and the Marine Corps. That is a significant amount of force, but spread out over these vast distances, it doesn't look as challenging as when you see the numbers on the Chinese side. Are you anticipating that this will grow in these early moments of getting ready for China, or is this it to go to war, say, in 2027? Good evening to you.
Oh, good evening, John. Thanks for having me. I think this is about it for Japan. I don't see them making the JSDF, the Japan Self-Defense Forces, bigger. They ought to. The Japanese Navy is about half as big as it should be. Same with the Air Force. The Japanese military is not the sum of its parts, unfortunately. The three parts, air, sea, and ground, really can't work together very well. They know they've got a problem, and they're taking some initial steps, but it's late in the day. It's also misses its recruitment targets by about 20% every year and has for years. So you and I would be relatively young men in the JSDF. No, I'm joking a little bit, a lot, actually. But it's a young force, or excuse me, an old force, because it can't recruit people. And it needs to be addressed. But everyone admires the problem. Nobody does much about it. So Japan is going to have to do something if Taiwan gets hit. They know it's important to them, but they don't quite know what to do other than maybe allocate some more money to it.
It is extremely important to the Prime Minister. I note that within these last days, the Prime Minister and Kishida in Seoul, meeting with President Yoon of South Korea, the Republic of Korea, and a representative of the People's Republic of China in the trilateral summit. And Japan has been consistent, whether in Seoul or in Tokyo or traveling, Kishida has been very consistent for more than a year, that Japan will fight. So let's use an example that you provide in your essay about Japan working with others. You say during the Fukushima catastrophe of 2011, the Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force worked very well with the U.S. Navy. Is that correct, Grant?
Well, it is. They have a pretty good tradition going back years of operating together. And they were the one part that worked well. The other parts of the U.S. military and the Japanese military, it was as if they were strangers and had never met each other, despite Americans having been in Japan for 60 years. I would note that the Japanese Navy did not have an amphibious capability at the time of Fukushima and the tsunami. And as a result, they got up to the affected area very quickly, but there was nothing they could do. And probably 2,000-3,000 Japanese froze to death because the JSDF could not get in and help them. That's an underreported tragedy of that business.
You also report that it in the Constitution itself is why it's called the Self-Defense Force and not a military. The demilitarization of the Imperial Japanese Navy and Army took place 1945 to 1948. You report that the Japanese Self-Defense Force was always conceived as an auxiliary to the U.S. military, correct? It was never, from the beginning, defined as a standalone.
That's right. And one understands the Japanese reaction to getting absolutely clobbered in World War II. But that effect, it lasted much longer than it should have. And as a result, you have a military which never really thought it was going to have to go out and fight on its own or much less provide much support. There were Japanese who understood this, including in the military, quietly did what they could to get ready. But the political class and academic class and everyone else was very happy to do the least possible and let the Americans take care of any problems that came up. That thing outlived it. That outlived its usefulness at least 10, 15 years ago. And we're trying to catch up on that now.
You have a recommendations, and we'll attend to them in just a moment. But I want to recall my memory of Japan since the Second War. There was a militant peace movement in Japan, so much so that I believe when the U.S. and Japan signed a mutual defense pact, I think it was 1960, there were riots. There were challenges in the legislature. There was a disruption throughout the nation. But that is several generations ago. Has that eased, or is there still a strong-minded pacifist clique in Japan or in Japan leadership?
It's really shrunk. It's sort of aged out where the people who were in that anti-military movement, they're disappearing. It's not really a significant political factor in Japan. The Americans sometimes seem to think it is, but it really isn't. Japan can do whatever it needs to do if it feels the need to. We've just never made it clear that this is what we've got to have from you. And we've handcuffed ourselves, and also the Japanese have handcuffed themselves. They're loosening up. But once again, it's late in the day, and we don't have 10 years. We probably don't even have 3 or 4 years. So they need to do things to fix it now.
All right, let's get to your recommendations. There is a long list of recommendations here. So you listening in Tokyo, be aware of the fact there's more coming, but we're going to do what we can. First of all, you begin with who's in charge. You want a joint command in Japan, I'm going to guess. And that joint command would look like what? If the Japan Self-Defense Forces are no longer adjunct, how do they work together at joint command?
Well, it just takes a little willingness to cooperate, and you can figure it out. But it does require the Americans and the Japanese to get together and say, we're going to fight, if necessary, as a unified whole. And Japan, what can you do? And this is what we need you to do. This is what we're going to do. And you get together and you do the plans. As far as who's in charge, well, that's easy enough to work out. But I say it just takes a willingness to cooperate and do this. But Japan has not even gotten to the point of planning for a Taiwan contingency. And the Americans don't seem to have thought it all that important to and could get the Japanese in on it as well. So the first thing, you do have to combine your forces so they can really operate together. And that you think it would have been done a long time ago, but we're nowhere near where we need to be.
You mentioned the Japan Air Self-Defense Force as a reluctant colleague. How so? Or do they not want to participate in, say, with the U.S. Air Force, those long-range bombers we have out in Guam? Are they not willing to participate in those exercises?
Well, it would take some encouragement. They do participate in exercises, but it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But it's always been said that the Japan Air Force, they want to fly around at 30,000 feet looking for a dogfight, rather than figuring out how they best fit in with the the air, sea, with the air and ground and maritime forces as well. So they have been the most reluctant to get involved in joint combined operations with the other Japanese services of all things, but they do participate in exercises with Americans and even with Australians. But in terms of getting themselves as part of the necessary joint strategy, they've been reluctant to do that. And you know, how do you fix it other than firing a few people till you find somebody who will play ball?
All right, let's attend to the parts of your recommendations for Japan to do, not the U.S. to do, that I've been taught wins wars. That's logistics. Stockpiles, for example, bases and facilities, medical personnel, a reserve, a mine warfare force. Is that underway? Are they thinking about this? Because all of those elements would be critical in a contest with China.
Well, they are thinking about it. And in some cases, if mine warfare in particular, Japan is excellent, maybe the world's best. Their mine warfare force needs to be about two or three times bigger. They've got good submarines, anti-submarine warfare, surface warfare is good as well, but they don't have enough of any of this. And they need more of it. And also it needs to be integrated with the U.S. and perhaps a couple other allied forces. Logistics, they have not done what they need to do at all in any respect. I don't think their magazines, their arsenals are enough to let them fight for more than a couple days. The idea is, well, we won't need it. And if we do, the Americans will give us what we need. I'm not so sure. There's sort of a recognition of the problem, but they're not addressing it. And their reserve system is a mess. How would they replace combat casualties, much less being psychologically and politically prepared to take casualties, that's an open question. And this is what comes of ignoring a problem for much too long.
We've been concentrating on Japan working with the U.S., but you also mentioned they need to train up working with the Republic of Korea, with Australia, Taiwan, India. Is that in their thinking now, even if it's not actual yet?
It is, actually. The Japanese do some exercises with the Indians. It's on a small scale, but it's good. And they get down to Australia and do some good training as well. But once again, it's a very small force to do these things. So they're gestures almost as much as anything else. They have some operational benefit from giving the troops some experience overseas and working with foreigners. Korea, that's always a tough nut, but it's gotten better. Some limited cooperation, and sometimes limited cooperation on things like maritime surveillance is pretty useful, and it can lead to something else. But once again, it takes place in a context where the Japanese don't really have a clear strategy for dealing with Taiwan or really dealing with China. And they have not done what's necessary to really build the JSDF into a coherent whole. And so you can do all these things, but what does it actually get you? And I would suggest not nearly as much payoff as should be the case by now.
What we're looking at here is a country that's not ready. It is aware that in a conflict, it would be attacked. It wouldn't just be operating at sea. That the basing of the U.S. aircraft carrier in Japan means that it would be a primary target on the opening round, correct?
That's right. I think everyone kind of knows that the U.S. and Japanese bases probably going to get hit in the event of a Taiwan attack. There are scenarios where the Chinese back off and don't hit them, thinking that, well, the Americans won't do anything for Taiwan if they don't get hit. But everyone knows that these bases in Japan are in the crosshairs. The Chinese actually have mock-ups out in the desert of, say, the U.S. and Japanese naval bases that they practice on. So that's going to happen. And the Japanese are talking about spending a lot of money to build concrete shelters and evacuation shelters for their residents. And that's really something the Japanese government's very good at, because if you pour a lot of concrete, you make your constituents happy, at least the ones who own the construction companies. But that's not nearly enough.
The book is Boiling Moat. This is just a brief look at all of the recommendations that Grant provides for what is to be done about Japan entering into this conflict, a conflict that is imminent, according to the People's Republic of China's speaker, Xi Jinping, and his counselors in Beijing. When we come back, we've talked about Japan getting involved. Right now, China's deeply involved in very much taking control of Oceania, especially the sea routes that connect parts of our allies together. Grant Newsham, author of When China Attacks, also the essay about what Japan needs to be done in the new book Boiling Moat from Stanford University's Hoover Institution, edited by Matt Pottinger. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.